Major Chrysler Reel 2. You were saying that you weren't there very long.
No, we were only there, I think, for under 3 weeks. I think if we'd been there much longer, there was a general feeling that we all ought to have been dropped sooner, and we could have done more. On the other hand, I think we'd have been caught, really, if we'd been there a lot longer. And if the Germans hadn't been on the run, I think they'd have soon made mincemeat of us, really.
Why do you think you would have been so easily caught?
Well, I mean, if the Germans are very efficient, really. They come after you on their motorbikes, and the Mackie, well, they were inclined. It was very lucky. They ran like rabbits. I mean, always, you know. I set up. You had to be very careful where you had an ambush, because you mustn't have an ambush anywhere near a village, because if you did, they go and shoot everybody in the village afterwards. So we had to choose places well away from villages. And then, a German armoured car would come along and you shoot at it. And then you'd look around, you'd find everybody else, scampered. But it was probably just as well, I mean, because if they didn't scamper, they probably would have been shot. But, I mean, you couldn't have had a pitched battle very well.
How many ambushes do you think you might have set up?
Oh, half a dozen, I suppose. Yes.
In which areas?
All around. I can show you on the map where it is. All around Boussière, those various places. I got the places on the map here.
Can you read them out?
Yes, I'll read them out to you. We never did them near the villages. We made it as far away as we could. Grenon, Soule, Boussière, Belmont, those places. Belmont, it's a side road, you see, that takes them on their way back. I suppose they were coming up, these people, Germans, coming up from the south of France, and was in a general northeasterly direction, back towards Germany. So a lot of people were coming through. It's a very, very wooded part, very minor white roads.
What kind of things were you ambushing?
We had that German paymaster and the odd armored car and people moving on up through, yes. And
soldiers on foot.
Yes, but we didn't stop very often to wait. I mean, they shot back at you and made all the leaves on the trees fall down around you. So then one went off. My early Boy Scout training, I was quite good with a compass. And in these woods, they have these tracks, what they call sanglier tracks. That's where the pigs are, wild pigs. And if you bend down very low, you can make your way through the wood, keeping your head down along these tracks. And with luck, you come out in the right place. But I found myself, yes, like that several times. Yes. It was a very active fortnight I had.
Were you able to see the results of you opening fire, whether you were causing any casualties?
No, I think we had wounded one or two people, yes. One time there was a chap in an armoured car, and he put his head out. And I thought discretion was the better part of valour, because I knew if I shot at him, I'd probably miss. And then he'd shoot me, so very, very close. So I didn't shoot him, which was very wise, I think. But that's how it was.
How many people would be in the ambushes?
Oh, you might get about, on our side, you might get about 10 chaps. They had no shoes, you see, or not much in the way of shoes. You couldn't, well, so they said, and you couldn't march them anywhere. But we had no lorry that ran by charcoal gas. I don't know what it is. It takes some time starting up. But after the ambush, it was very nerve-wracking, because you park the thing some way from the road, and then the charcoal has to sort of preheat somehow, and you have a little sort of fire under the lorry, and then you pull a lever, and it goes tick, 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 and you hope that it'll start. But sometimes it wasn't hot enough, I suppose, well, like a Primus stove when you pump it up, and you get all you get is a loud bang and a cloud of dust and smoke, and then you've got to start again, you know, this pre-heating business to get the lorry started. So that was very worrying sometimes.
Were there many casualties amongst the men that you took in the ambushes?
No, no, no. They all scarpered very quick. No, 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 no. It was. I think it probably it upset the Germans really, 'cause it, you know, it made. See, once the breakthrough in from Normandy had happened, it meant the Germans were on the move, and I suspect that all over France there were people sort of reporting on them and peppering them, and it made them very. It disconcerted them, I think, and made it very difficult for them ever to stop again until they got to the Rhine, and they really didn't, I don't think. So I think it did quite a lot of good. We sent a lot of information back as to which regiments were coming through us. Whether anybody had time to listen to what we were saying, I rather doubt, really.
How could you tell which regiments they belonged to?
Well, because we the ones we caught, we found out where they came from.
Did they speak willingly?
Well, I suppose they did. I really can't remember that. I think, else they had their badges on them. I can't remember that. But I've got a note somewhere of some regiment we found that went through. Tell you no. I went the other day, 2 years ago, we went, or was it 3 years ago? It was more than that, because it was 40 years after VE Day. I went back to Langres and met a good many of the chaps who'd been in the Mackie. We had quite a happy time, really. And I'd been given a book by a chap who was the head of the Mackie. I can't really remember him. But it's called Clovis, Le Prix de la Liberté. And he says that thanks to our, we got the, see we got an airstrike on one of the villages, and we blew up, I think the RAF. It was at a place. I have to go and try and tell you now. We managed. We saw that all the Germans had sort of holed up at a place called Belmont, a village. It was very very near our wood. We looked down. We could look down more or less into the village and see them. So we called for an RAF strike, and there's some dispute as to whether it, in the end it was an RAF or US air strike, but it didn't matter because and we sent a message in clear, not in code, and. Sure enough, our prayers were answered because these fighters turned up, and they zoomed, and over again they dived onto the village of Belmont, where these Germans were, and I think they killed 80 Germans, and 24 counted them 24 trucks, which were largely loaded with munitions, were blown up. They were those horse-drawn trucks, carts, not trucks, and that was pretty marvelous, really. And after that, of course, the Mackie thought we were marvelous, really. You know, they'd been a bit sniffier when we first arrived, I think.
In what way sniffy?
Well, you know, they thought we weren't much use to them, I suppose. But once we'd done that, I mean, you know, we were thought grand people. And actually, according to this chap, I was telling you about this chap who wrote this book, he says that thanks to the intervention of the RAF brought by our mission, the German army commanded by the general of the division, I didn't know all this, he was called Fritz von Brodowski. Fritz von Brodowski. He was unable to ever to mount a sort of rearguard action again. He had no ammunition left, So they reckoned that all that, so he cleared off. Otherwise, they reckoned that he'd have stayed there and fought, and all the villages round there would all have been destroyed. So they're very grateful to Stanley. I don't think necessarily deservedly, but they are still. I mean, after 40 years, that we more or less saved all those little villages from becoming a last stand, because all the ammunition was blown up.
When you were back in Britain and you were given your instructions as to the objective of Team Stanley, what did they say to you as to what you should attempt to do?
Before we went?
Yes.
Don't think they told us anything. I can't remember. I think we'd been taught how to do ambushes. And we had a supply, that's another thing. A lot of time went into this supply drop business. So, you have a coded message, you send it out, and you set up a dropping zone and give them the map reference of it. And our communications weren't very good, really, because when we dropped, the transmitter had a pretty bad fall, I think. And it never worked very well. I don't think Jack Grinham was responsible for it not working very well. But when we got back afterwards, you find only about half our messages were legible, or only part of them. But we asked for a supply drop on a dropping zone I asked for, but they said, oh no, we go to another one. It must have been laid on by somebody else. And we're somewhere away, and we had great difficulty in getting to this dropping zone. And it was in the dark, and then we met the Germans. They began shooting, and it was great confusion. And then we were told we couldn't go any further. However, with some presence of mind, there was a big cornfield nearby, so I got them all to light little three little bonfires of straw. Plus de pie, shouting all the time. And with that, and with a little bit of cordite, we managed to make little bonfires. And shined our torch with the right sort of Morse letter, I suppose it was, and then endless goodies showered from the sky. But I think at that time in France, you really only got to go out and light a bonfire, and people would drop containers on you, really.
What kind of goodies?
Containers, these full of rifles, usually. What we really wanted was Pierce. That was something that would go through armour. We got a lot of rifles, mostly, I think they were. We wanted boots as well, but we never got those. We wanted a new transmitter, we never got that. I think there must have been too many people asking for things, and not enough people in England able to supply them at the end there.
So were you given more or less a free hand by the people back in Britain as to what to do? I mean, obviously, from what you've said, you were organising supply drops and interrupting the German retreat.
Yes.
But when you were sent, did they more or less say to you, well, it's up to you what you do as long as you hamper the Germans?
Suppose so. I can't remember. I suppose that we had no specific instructions. No, I mean, a lot of our training was we were going to blow up all the railway engines. We were taught how to always... I think on the steam trains, there's a thing called a steam box on one side. You always had to blow up the same side so they couldn't replace them with another engine. But, I mean, there was no engine, no railways running then. I mean, it had all been blown up. We had these railway workers with us, but, I mean, I think they very often they spent the day working on the railway to mend it, and they spent the evening blowing it up, I suppose. But I think by the time I went there, I mean, the whole thing was... done for, really. No rails.
On the ambushes, was it you in charge, or was it the leader of the Maquis in charge?
Oh, me, usually. Me. I don't know what the others were doing. I think they were doing, I don't know, my Frenchman, I don't know what he was doing, talking with the Premier Regiment de France, I think, and the high-ups, rather, probably. I don't know, I'm a fairly burn-out old chap. You know, I just got on with it, really. And I had my radio operator safely in my farmhouse. I told him he shouldn't go out and get killed. No.
But was there any problem about who should take precedence? when you went in, was there any problem coordinating with the leadership?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I didn't see many bosses, really. Schoolboys very often were helpful. Amazing, really. They risk their life for a thing. They go down into one of these villages and to get a machine pistol thing, a Schmeisser, they'd really go, a young lad of 16, he'd risk his life to go and get one, you know. It was, they were full of spirit. But there were no grown men really about much, except for the gendarmes and the cheminots. And they kept themselves to themselves. I don't know what they did. They must have been busy in the wood, I suppose. I can't remember.
Did anybody have any prejudice against your presence as an Englishman?
I don't think so. I think they got more friendly once we had this airstrike. They thought, well, here's someone who's some use. And then another thing people they had in the wood were all these bad girls. They had them when they were there. Hair cut off because I suppose they've been cohabiting with the Germans.
How many of those?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Just a handful?
That's a handful, yes. That's it, yes. But the whole thing, it all was rather like going to the films. I mean, it was also very sort of, you know, exciting and things happening every second. You know, anybody might turn up. And I think they were only there for, you know, under 3 weeks. I think it couldn't have gone on like that. I mean, you know, it was altogether, you know, too high key, really.
You said that you went in uniform.
Yes.
But you discarded it.
Oh, yes.
Did you have any qualms about doing that?
Oh, none. No. No, no, I don't think so. No, no. But you think it's unsporting, do you mean?
Well, because the Germans might shoot you as
well. I think they'd have shot us anyway, yes, wouldn't they? Oh, yes, they shot us anyway, yes.
You thought you'd be shot even if you were in uniform?
Oh, I'm sure. Well, yes. After having had your fingernails pulled out, yes. Oh, yes. All this war crime stuff that go on now, I mean, it's quite ridiculous. I mean, what goes on in wartime is very different from what goes on, and how people think now, you know. To put someone, have someone up for war crimes after 50 years is the height of madness and indecency, yes.
Because of the different mentality.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you could think, I quite see, you know, towards the end of the war, there, you capture some of these people, and then you thought, well, oh dear, you know, the war will be over in 6 months, they'll all be free again. And you've had all this sweat to catch them. So what's the point? And no doubt, atrocities breed atrocities, don't they?
Yes.
You know, I mean, out east, I mean, Japanese poured petrol on your lot, and your lot poured petrol on them. And it wasn't considered very extraordinary, really.
Did Mr. Grinham also shed his uniform once he got there?
Oh, I think so. As far as I remember, unless he says to the contrary, I think he had. Yes, I'm sure he would have. Yes. I think we only dropped our uniforms because we thought we broke our leg when we dropped, you know, and couldn't get away, or we dropped in the wrong place. You might be able to sort of think of some story that what you were doing.
Did you have any kind of cover story?
Yeah, we had. Yes, we did. I got a false identity card. I was meant to be an engineer or something from Clermont-Ferrand. Yes, with another name and a photograph, and we had, you know, the right bit of ration card for the week. That sort of thing, yeah. Oh, yes, you had to kind of had to pass as a Frenchman, you could.
But you could pass with a Frenchman with the Germans, but not with the French.
I'm sure, yes. Mm.
Did the French Maquis that you were with manifest any expression of politics? Did they show what political leanings they had?
I don't think so. People use the word communist always, you know, because communists were better organized than the rest, really, but they'd always had a sort of bit of a, you know, a tradition of working underground. But for communists, they often you must read nationalists, really. I don't. My general impression was that they were working class, I suppose, more. Middle class never behave very well in these sort of occasions, do they? Really, you know, shopkeepers are out to make money, aren't they? They're more likely to collaborate. Collaborate is a word you never hear nowadays, but I mean, you did then.
But were you aware of the political commitment of the Frenchman you were working with?
Oh, I don't know. They didn't come into it, really, I don't think.
Did you have any women in the Maquis?
I don't know. Certainly there were some women on the reception committee when we were dropped, you know, there was women there. I don't know otherwise. No, I don't, not, I no idea.
Did any of them go on the ambushes?
No. There were a lot of people in that wood, but I didn't really go into the wood very much and see them all, you know. I dare say there were. There certainly were these three nurses who were rather ashamed, really. They stayed behind to look after some wounded Mackie in a sort of small chateau just nearby. And the Germans came and tortured them all night to find out where the Mackie was. And they've now got a rather marvellous memorial at I think it's at Belmont, in the cemetery there, explaining it all and why. So I mean there must be a lot of women supporters. Yes, I imagine they ran messages and things. I don't really know, or can't, I either never knew or else I can't remember.
Were there any local French who remained committed to the Germans to the end?
Oh, I shouldn't think so. No, I shouldn't think so. No, I think they were running for cover, I think. I don't know. They caught... When I went back the other day, I met the rather nice little brown men they are now, the Mackie now. They're all countrymen, you know. They all look a bit short and sunburns and all. I met one of them who'd... motored me to Paris in an old lorry when the thing was over, you know. And he said we had great trouble getting there because there were no decent tyres and it was punctured all the way. However, he got back again. He said he's still got the lorry now. It was quite good. Another one of them said, well, they caught the major who shot these girls and he got his boots, he said. So that was quite pleasing. So, I mean... I think memories are very strong there, and all the sort of talk about France and Germany all being friends again. But I mean, they've got little notices written up on all every crossroads and here and there where somebody was killed on the date, you know, and murdered by the Germans, sort of thing. No love lost there at all.
Did they seem appreciative of Britain's effort or not?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, was. Certainly, well, it went back after 40 years. We were greeted as heroes, yes. But it all ended very suddenly. We were all, you know, we were overrun by, I think there were French troops from the south. They were dressed up in American uniform, I think. They came up, their recce units came up and overran us, sent a message back. The message came back next day, returned to via Paris forthwith. So we did. And then I think we spent one day writing our report, and then that was it. No more. And we never knew what happened to anybody else, you know. I suppose by design, I suppose. And that was the end of it.
Were there any special scenes of liberation in the towns and villages as the Allied troops came in?
No, not really. I don't know, really. I didn't go to a town. I mean, I went to... We were near this town, Longs, but I only went there, you know, 5 years ago. I never went. I don't think I went to Longs then. No, I don't think so. I don't think so, no. I didn't see that sort of thing, people riding on trucks and waving flags. No, we didn't have any of that stuff, no.
Who debriefed you at back in Britain about what you'd done?
Well, I suppose somebody did. I wrote a note about, a few pages. That ex I know that exists because I was horrified to be handed a copy of it that the Americans had acquired.
This was at a recent
A
reunion,
recent reunion,
you said,
yes.
at Washington.
Either then or no, I was in London. We've had them had the Yanks back again since then. I think last year we had them back, a reunion, and we took them back to Milton Hall. And I was amazed that they should have had all that information, because it was very secret. I mean, we'd have thought we'd have been shot if we'd mentioned the word SOE. We, I never thought of saying that for 25 years. So then we were, then I suppose I was asked if I wanted to go out east. I'd been married the previous March, so I thought, well, that's enough's enough. But they couldn't send me back to my regiment because the poor old 5th Battalion, the Oxford Bucks, had been split up by that time, no longer existed. So I was posted to, I think, the 52nd, that's the 1st Battalion, the Oxford Bucks, were in gliders then. So I went, and they were at Bulford, I think it was. And there was no room for me much, and I slept in one of those tin huts, condemned after the First World War, slept in the corridor there. And I had a few rides in the gliders, most unpleasant form of transport. Makes you feel very sick, actually, because they bump up and down while they're on tow. And the only nice bit is when they cast the tow off, and then you have about 2 minutes. Well, it's rather like parachuting in some ways. You have about 1 minute of happiness, and then you hit the ground with a bang, and that's awful, yes. But I didn't really fit in with their lot, really, because, I mean, they were already organized without me. So I suppose they were just about to go off to, I don't know, Arnhem, was it they went to, or one of these places. So I was posted to, I think it was the first para, left behind parties, I suppose they gone somewhere, and they were stationed at a place called Stoke Rochford, which is on the North Road outside Grantham. And that was a place, it was full of people who deserted, I suppose, or with the cooks and bottle washers, or this and that, and one or two officers, I suppose, who weren't considered suitable for active operations. And they had more men in the guard room than they had on parade, and they all had these little sort of pocket hacksaws, so they always cut themselves out of the guard room every night. And there's only one other juniorish officer like me, so we were always held responsible for them escaping. And then we had to do then they these parachutists, there were 8,000 people parachutists, because they kind of they went into Grantham and knocked all the bottles off the bar with their elbows, how they do, we are tough, we got a red hat. And I was meant to go in there on a patrol every night and round them up, try and stop them fighting people. So however, I used to go in there with a couple of NCOs, and we used to go into a bar quietly and wait till it died down a bit, and then motor back again.